passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, our one podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
And there is a new number one atop college football. And yes, it's the old number one. Georgia back at the top of the CFP, which just shows you how utterly perplexing the CFP is, considering we've known all along that Georgia was the number one team in the country. Why it took them a couple of weeks to get there, we don't know. But this is the top 25, Georgia, Ohio State, and there's those honest Michiganders at number three, Florida State, and you see the rest. As you look at, there's Alabama at eight. They have not moved in spite of a bunch of big wins. Ole Miss hanging on pretty tight. LSU, 15, not bad for a 7-3 team. And Tennessee, in spite of getting literally housed by Missouri, still in the top 20. It just doesn't, I mean, you have to really be bad not to make the top 25 is my opinion. Welcome into the program. Great to have you with us. We have a lot to share with you over these next couple of hours. More headlines to pass along, and there's a lot happening out west. The judge saying Oregon State and Washington State will be the only two governing members of the Pac-12 board. Do they control all the money? They might. We'll find out. Judge. And according to The Athletic, is the Texas A&M job better than most think, and could Aggies shock us? It could shock us in many, many ways. Farewell to the SEC West, hands down the toughest division in college football. Mike Rodak joining us to talk about that and much more. He covers the Crimson Tide and the SEC for 24/7. Mike, great to have you back on the program. Let's pick up that theme. We're just a couple of weeks away from the end of the West. Especially in what the last 15 or 20 years, what a division that has been.
Sure has. I think I was on the show maybe late winter, early spring, and it was starting to become a topic back then. This would be the last season of a lot of different things in college football, the 14 playoffs, the divisions and the SEC and the Big Ten, and even, you know, the TV deals changing. And yeah, I think some people might not have realized it at the time, but now it's becoming something that is a little bit more imminent. Even on Saturday when Alabama won the SEC West and I wrote that it was the 15th and final time, and that was the headline of my story, there are some people that said, what are you talking about? It's the final time that Alabama wins the SEC West. And I said, it is. This is the end. So it's a big change, and it's a division that I think especially, you know, for the last 20 years, and it's been around 32 years, but especially the last 20 years has been just an absolute meat grinder, you know, for the teams that are in there. And obviously Alabama and their rise under Nick Saban plays a big role, but it's a lot more than that. And it's been pretty deep, you know, 1-6 and then 1-7 once Texas A&M joined. And I think any coach in America would tell you that it's been the toughest division to coach the last 20 years.
Mike, as someone who not only covered the Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher controversy a couple of years ago, but really it was right in the middle of it. I mean, I think you were there breaking that story on the night that it happened from Birmingham. I was just curious, and I realize nobody says anything other than the right thing, but whether or not there was any schadenfreude going on in the Alabama football office the other day as Jimbo Fisher was sent packing.
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. You know, I would have to imagine that there's some sort of strife, even though we heard all these good things and they kind of made up and said there are a couple, you know, West Virginia boys that kind of got into a scrap and then, you know, moved past it. You have to imagine that on both sides of it, that Jimbo Fisher wasn't happy with Nick Saban, you know, publicly saying what he did. And obviously Nick Saban, I think any human being probably wouldn't be happy with, you know, some of the things that Jimbo Fisher said. So I think it's only human nature to assume that there's some level of kind of lingering, very quiet animosity. I don't think that's a stretch to say. Do I think Alabama was popping champagne, you know, yesterday or 2 days ago when it happened? No. You know, I think Nick Saban realizes that the business is what it is, and you know, ultimately coaches do get fired and coaches move on, and you're going to see different coaches down the road, and you know, there's relationships that kind of that exist, you know, outside of team colors and then team logos. So I don't think Nick Saban's ever going to get up and say, oh, it was great that Jimbo Fisher got fired and I won. I don't know if that's necessarily what he was thinking behind the scenes either, but I think Nick Saban's a competitive enough guy that I don't think he was just sitting there listening to Jimbo Fisher 2 years ago saying he should have been slapped more as a child and, you know, just taking that and not having any sort of effect on him.
So Mike, this question has already been asked to me, and I know the answer, but I'll ask you since you already know the answer as well. So we're not expecting to see Jimbo Fisher in the Saban rehabilitation room next to the football coaching office where the former head coaches line up as analysts. Would that be a fair statement?
I think so. I think it would be pretty shocking if that ever happened. And I, you know, from Jimbo's standpoint, I don't know if that's, I just can't imagine him ever lowering himself to that point where, you know, the coach that you, you know, pretty publicly attacked, you're now making $30,000 a year and cutting up film for. I just can't see him having won a national championship, kind of being where he's at in his career, doing that, even though it's worked for coaches in the past. I don't know if there's ever been really a coach of his stature with his record that's done it. So I would be very surprised. I think, you know, Jimbo Fisher's, you know, he has certainly runway left in his career, but there's no pressure, especially with his buyout, to really go and, you know, prove himself at the next job right away. I think he could just kind of sit tight for a little while and, you know, like Coach O said, just tell me which door to leave through, and I'm sure he'll be happy with the $75 million.
Yeah, I can't remember what O got, $17 million. I'm only curious if there's anything left from Coach O's $17
million. I'm sure the Miami Beach bars have gotten a pretty good slice of that.
On Saban, somebody you cover, we had Terrion Arnold on, and I know he talks a lot to various people in Alabama. I think he has some NIL deals. So he's probably said a lot of this, but I was struck yesterday by something he told us, because I had not heard any of his previous interviews. When he was talking about the motivation of this team, and a lot of people have written in your domain that Saban was dropping the mic on the media the other day, but when he talked about naysayers. But Terrion told us something really fascinating. He said the players aren't nearly as concerned, or weren't nearly as concerned with what the pundits said, but the former players who posted on social media after the Texas game and in the midst of the USF game. And I was just curious what you thought about those comments and how much that may or may not have affected the resurgence.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's both, you know, because even the naysayers, the whole Lank, let all the naysayers know. I mean, that existed even before the Texas loss. That was something that came up over the summer with Jalen Milroe and Terrion Arnold. And it really based on, if I think we're talking about in fall camp, you know, they did say it was based on people thinking that because they didn't really have a clear-cut quarterback, that they were lower in the preseason polls, that this team wouldn't be as good. I think that, you know, the outside, the fans, that outside media noise certainly played a part in it. But the former players, too, I do think players pay attention to. Even going back to last year, I mean, Greg McElroy came out and had a pretty, you know, pretty sharp commentary on where Alabama was after that LSU loss last year. And, you know, even players came to the facility. Bo Scarborough, I think Nick Saban said, came there and kind of put his fist on the table and said things weren't like they used to be. So there was sort of that idea that players these days aren't as tough and, you know, practices aren't as hard and it's all about the NIL money. And, you know, there's probably a degree of truth to that. But I think players also push back and say, like, we still work hard ourselves, even though we're getting paid. We're still putting a lot of time and sweat and energy into it. And I think they take offense to that to some degree as well. So, you know, there's always going to be the, you know, 20 years ago, we walked uphill both ways in the snow sort of mentality. And, yeah, you know, was it harder back then? Probably. Was Nick Saban tougher on his players back then? Probably. Doesn't mean that everything that existed back then can be applied effectively to these days. And I think Nick Saban has adjusted and adapted to what he's needed to do. And obviously the job that he's done with this team this year is probably proof positive of that.
Mike, I think this narrative could start more in 2 weeks, assuming Alabama is in the playoffs. But there are those who wonder if Saban can somehow pull this thing off, puts the exclamation point on his seventh national championship at Alabama, would that likely lead him to be more inspired to come back? Or, and you know the obvious, would he say, I can't do any more than that. I can go commiserate with Bill Belichick as he tries to figure out what to do with the rest of his life. Any signs, any signals as you watch this team up close?
Yeah, it's a good question. And that's something we've discussed before, is which way does he go out? Is it on top, or is it him saying, if I'm on top, I can keep doing this? And he continues to coach until it's proven that he can't. And what he's always said publicly is that he will leave when he feels like he's dragging the program down. So I lean more towards a bad year being his last year, you know, bad being a relative term, versus a really good national championship year being his last year. But who knows? And that's something that is really hard to read. And you can kind of look for clues and signs even today. And, you know, on the SEC conference call, he was being asked about the end of divisions and what things are going to look like next year. And he says, I'm not even thinking about next year. And you kind of think in the back of your head, well, is he not thinking about next year because he's not going to be coaching next year? And you just don't know the answer for sure. You don't know the answer either way. And I don't think he's going to be a coach that broadcasts it beforehand, you know, where there's a farewell tour, a Coach K, or you think the baseball, Mariano Rivera going around every stadium and he's getting gifts every game and there's always a big to-do about it. I just can't imagine Nick Saban doing that because of his hatred for external noise and external factors. So when it happens, it's probably going to be sudden. And so I don't know if we can sit here for sure and say this is not his last year, or next year won't be his last year, et cetera. But we're obviously at the point in his career where it's going to be a question every single year, and I think a legitimate question every single year.
And Mike, I brought up Belichick for a lot of reasons. Everyone knows how close he and Nick Saban are, but you also covered Belichick. And this has been, you tell me, but fairly easy to see. I mean, the trend lines have been there now since the day, even really the year before Tom Brady left, have they not?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's, you know, Tom Brady's last year, that team collapsed down the stretch and, you know, lost in the first round of the playoffs. And really ever since then, it's not been good for them. They're sub 500 since then. And, the funny thing is Bill O'Brien, who's his offensive coordinator and obviously the offensive coordinator last year at Alabama, has a more recent NFL playoff win as a head coach than Bill Belichick. He won with the Texans
amazing.
In 2019. Bill Belichick's last playoff win was 2018, the Super Bowl against the Rams. So, it's, you know, he's already getting a little bit more leeway than I think a lot of coaches would get. And there's been coaches who have been more successful lately that have been fired. So, you know, I don't think he gets forever. I think by all appearances right now, this is the end. You know, I don't think he's going to get fired during this season, but there'll be a mutual parting of ways. I would fully expect after this year. And he's less than a year younger than Nick Saban, but you know, the NFL will eat you alive. And it's really hard to sustain things with the salary cap. And obviously you lose a player like Tom Brady, you're trying to find the next quarterback. They haven't done that. And it will get you. So this is the end of Bill Belichick in New England. I fully expect that.
Well, I circle back to the question I asked a minute ago, but I mean, you know that relationship. I'm sure they don't talk a lot during the season, but you have to think that Nick Saban is watching that. And you know, it has to be agony to him to watch somebody that is his equal. There's no question. Bill Belichick has done it all. I mean, I've lost over 7 or 8 Super Bowls. I mean, I can't even remember. It's been so many. And to think it, to see it end this poorly, I just wonder if Nick Saban isn't taking note.
Right, exactly, yeah, and to have it go out, you know, it's different too in the NFL. It's different in, you know, a media market like Boston. I think it's, to coach there is really tough, and you know they're going to eat you alive, I think, a little bit more quickly than things might happen down here. And you know, there's differences between college and the NFL in that regard. But yeah, I think it's, you don't want to let it linger that long and be something where now the Patriots are having to completely rebuild, not just quarterback, but their entire roster. I mean, this could be a top three draft pick for them. And, you know, we talk about Drake May and Caleb Williams as the two best quarterbacks in the draft. Well, you know, the Patriots could have a shot at those guys. So, I think, Saban certainly, I'm sure, will pay attention and, have sort of his annual summit or meeting with Bill Belichick. And, it's a good question of how much it actually affects his own thinking. But I think Saban himself would probably point back to, some of the differences that exist in the NFL, where it's built for parity and it's built for teams like the Patriots to be toppled, whereas college football right now is still built for teams like Alabama to stay on top.
Always a great conversation. Mike Rodak covering Belichick and then Saban. I just can't get over that, Mike. Many thanks. We'll see you soon. And that's where we are here. Andy Staples joining us in a few minutes. Stephen Means and Ari Wasserman, some great guests, and your phone calls right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back, and let's get some phone calls. We haven't had a chance to talk to this guy since his hero in life got fired the other night. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Paul, I'm sorry I'm going to call you. I'm just kind of really up in the head right now. I mean, because...
Okay, that was not a long call. How about Earl in Maryland? Hey, Earl.
Hi, how you doing, Mr. Bomb? Always good to call you. Big Maryland fan. I called you last year about my Maryland Terps.
You did.
I just want to get your thoughts on, can Mr. Loxley turn this around and can we pull off a big-time upset with Michigan on Saturday afternoon?
Well, I think it's a really interesting game for Coach Loxley. I mean, you have to – I don't want to sound like an odds maker here, but this is probably the ultimate trap game between the two biggest games on the schedule. And
yep.
I think Maryland's a good club. I know they were mired in a pretty rough losing streak, but I'm a huge fan of Coach Loxley. And I think this could be a close game.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you, sir. I'll definitely be calling you again. I appreciate
you. Hope so. Well, you be well. Hartwell is up next in Louisiana. Hello, Hartwell.
How are you doing, Paul?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Good. Hey, I've got a probably unpopular comment about Jim Harbaugh and Michigan. When I was growing up playing ball, I played with some guys that made it to the major leagues and to the NFL. And I played second base and middle linebacker. And it was my job to try to figure out what the third base coach was signaling to the batter and what the sideline was signaling to the quarterback. Okay. And we had a coach that went every week ahead of time to our future opponent to scout the other team. We changed our signals up every week, whether it was a bunt, a steal, take a strike or whatever. And so this whole business about jumping on Michigan about sign stealing, it's Purdue, Rutgers, Maryland, Ohio State, it's their business to change their signs up every week.
Well, Matt, Hartwell, let me explain something, okay? You're right.
Yes, sir.
That is absolutely a fact, but I don't want people to be misconstrued here. This is not about stealing signs. This is about sending someone out in advance to steal signs. I know that sounds like a joke. But it is perfectly legal to steal signs within the framework of the game. Everyone does it, but no one does what this program is accused of doing. No one, to my knowledge, has ever employed somebody that is connected to your staff to go out to various places, dress in a surreptitious fashion, stand on the sidelines, sit in the stands, and then pick off the signs. That is clearly against the rules. Stealing signs within the framework of the game is not against the rules. Yeah, I know that's a distinction. I know that's what some people in the world of the land of victimhood, Michigan, are saying, but that's all there is to it. Bash is up next. Hello, Bash.
The best there is, the best there was, and the best there will be. Paul Feinbaum, how we doing? Paul, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm listening. Yeah, I'm doing the same as I was the last time you asked.
Sorry, Paul. I didn't mean to throw you off there with my introduction. I apologize for that, and just asking how you're doing today. Sorry again. I know I'm wasting time. Just wanted to call and ask: has Jim from Tuscaloosa called in from last week? Since the last time he came on the show and said his disgusting, inhumane comments.
Jim quit the show, Bash.
Well, until he comes back, I'm taking full credit that I'm the reason he refuses to come back. And until he does, thank you. Thank you. Until he does, I will be the first one to put him back into his little hole in Tuscaloosa where he belongs if he does decide to come out. On that subject of disgusting people, let's talk about your enemy this week, Paul, old Ric Flair. You know, everyone knows him for his nickname as being the Nature Boy, right? But that's only his, you know, generic nickname. The real nickname that everyone in the wrestling world knows him for is that he is the dirtiest player in the game. And he got you, Paul. He got the most talked about talk show in the sport of college football to mention pathetic old Michigan to get talked about on your program when we should be talking about the two best teams in the country that are going to be meeting each other in the SEC championship game. In the SEC championship game.
Well,
for the,
Bash, the bottom line is Michigan is the biggest story in college football. Ric Flair had nothing to do with it. He's simply a small player in this conversation. We'll take a short break. We're back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hey, welcome back. Stacy is up next. Hey, Stacy, what's going on?
Feinbaum, what's up?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Feinbaum, what's up? Can you hear me?
I sure can, Stacy. Thank you.
Okay, I did that on purpose, Paul, because Bash gonna call and try to call me out yesterday. The only reason I ain't gonna go off on him is because he's an Alabama fan, and I want peace between the Bama fans. But you see, Bash, Paul don't even know his last name. He just answered to both. So check that out,
Bash.
Yeah,
by the way,
do your homework.
I don't mind. I converse with every caller, but Bash, there's something about Bash that when he calls, I just tend to. Do you ever meet somebody where you just tighten up and you don't want to exchange anything with them? That's how I feel about
Bash. Yeah, I understand that.
I mean, I
understand that.
I just like the second
ahead,
the guy
sorry,
walks
Paul.
In the room, I just want to like beat my head against the wall.
Well, to Bash, give Paul 50 feet, okay? Give him 50 feet, Bash. But Paul, let me say this, Paul. Let me say this about the college football playoff, and I want to serve notice to I-Man, JK. Listen, JK, when Alabama beat Georgia, we are going to be in the playoffs. You can take that to the bank. Paul said today on his show, Paul said you got to be a sorry team not to get in the top 25, you said, Paul?
Well, I mean, I was reading out some of those teams, and you know, two of them just lost badly, Ole Miss and Tennessee, and it didn't seem to really affect them. They're still, and I realize they also lost to very good teams, but
guess who is not in the top 25, and guess who is not going to get into the top 25, Paul?
Colorado.
The Miami Hurricane.
Miami's not that far from the top 25, though. They could, with a win against Louisville, they could probably get in.
Now, Paul, you know that's not going to happen. What's the odds of that happening, Paul?
Well, it's not that far-fetched.
Well, I tell you, hey, it's not going to happen. How about that? So, okay. JK,
now, Stacey, I'll take you at face value.
All right, let me get a roll tide, Paul.
Roll tide. Thanks for the call, Keenan. I should not admit on the air that certain callers creep me out. That's not a good thing for a host to do, is it?
It's not that Bash is freaking out.
Is there any way we can splice that out and don't replay it? Hey, Keenan, what's going on, Keenan?
Hey, Paul. I'm a little bit out of my territory. I appreciate you taking the call. I'm Bucknut, living in Bama. You had a caller yesterday wanting you to apologize to Harbaugh and Flair, and he should be apologizing to you. But
what's that old phrase you heard as a kid? It's going to be a cold day in you know where.
There's a lot of four-letter words that come to mind when I think about Michigan, though, and I'm biased, though. I've been born and raised Buckeye, Toledo, Ohio, right on the line, you know. There's some history there, you know, and it's fun. I love the sport. I love living in SEC country. I love what you do for the sport, you know, and stuff like that. It's just, you know, I get it, you know. Like, if I was a Michigan fan, God forbid, if I was a Michigan fan, I wouldn't be out here, you know, asking for apologies in a sport that the only apologies that touched back, you guys had a great conversation yesterday with from Bama. You know, he made a comment about Saban walks in the room and has the humility to apologize to the team and tell them, you know, when he didn't do his job and prepare them for that game. That's the only apologies that anybody should ever, from a professional level, when somebody doesn't do their job, have the self-awareness to be able to walk in the room and say, hey, guys, you know, sorry about that. But to demand something like that, first off, that speaks a lot about yourself. I'm sure he's a Michigan fan too, but yeah, Harbaugh should be apologizing to his team and he should man up. I don't understand how I think of Jim Tressel. A lot of my Buckeye fellow friends, you know, don't care much for, but I respected how he handled that situation and was man enough to be able to.
I think Jim Tressel was always a classy guy and deserved better. He was really a good coach. Hey, thank you very much. Okay, what do we got here? Oh, we have a tweet on the screen from AJ in Pell City. Feinbaum, can we go ahead and give Bash the worst caller of the year award? You know, AJ, I think you can do that for us. I mean, isn't it already residing in your trophy case?
Mr. Feinbaum, how you feeling, man? Thank you so much for taking my call.
Speaking of that, AC is up next.
That's right. Well, let's talk about Mr. Bash. You know, I did not call him out a month ago. He accused me, but it is okay for him to call someone out like Jim, the legend we talk about, the legend of all legends who points every day. But it is okay for an idiot like Bash to call out people. And who cares about AJ always a jerk? He's not from Pell City. He's from Trash Can City. Auburn. Ugh, makes me vomit. This is what's going to happen to the Tigers. They're going to get Hulk smashed. I know. The fourth hour, this idiot is going to call me. He's going to call me out. So be it. Because you're just you're a bottom tier loser. But a lady named Judy called me out last night. It's great. Because she wants me in the bedroom. But guess what, lady? I am not interested. Holla.
Holla. Holla seems to be the word. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You guys remember this? You Georgia fans may want to screenshot this. We'll leave it up there for a second. This is a Ric Flair tweet, and I've never quite understood this, but you wonder how he became a Michigan fan. This was, I think, before the time when Georgia met Michigan for the CFP. It said, "Sorry, Kirby Smart, you should have shook my hand." I don't think that's the best English, but it doesn't matter. on the sidelines when I was standing next to Herschel Walker in Athens. Today it's all blue. Coach Jim Harbaugh has been shaking my hand since 1989. Go Blue, University of Michigan. Last time I spoke to Ric Flair, I mentioned how many people in the South were, disappointed would be a very tame word. Ric Flair, when we had him on our show before the Georgia-Alabama game in 2021, talked about the Dogs and they're my team. And I remember, I think his wife even asked me if we could get him a sideline pass so he could stand on the sidelines with the Dogs. Obviously, Kirby wasn't responding or he wouldn't have asked us. And suddenly, he's bailed on the Dogs because Kirby didn't shake his hand. Maybe during the game, Rick, Kirby's got other things to do, like get his team ready to play and make sure the signals are called correctly and make sure Georgia has 11 men on the field. But I'm sure the most important thing for Kirby is shaking the hand of a 72-year-old retired wrestler. He is retired, isn't he?
I would think.
Didn't he have his farewell match a few months ago?
Well, he has one every year.
He has one every year? Mm-hmm. You know, he did not die, Kathy, no. That was just he is not dead yet. Daryl is up next.
Well, maybe if Ric Flair would have been Bill Goldberg, he could have probably got on the sidelines, huh?
Yeah, I mean, Bill Goldberg earned a spot on the sidelines. He was a great player for
exactly.
The University of
Georgia. We do not want Ric Flair on the sidelines during a football game. No, do not want. It's not going to happen. You know what I mean? Paul, do you know how good, when we get to the 12-team playoff this year, Paul, I'm going to make a prediction right now. College football will have the best postseason of all sports to include all professional sports. I think it's going to be awesome. Right now, how many teams do you say? I would say there's probably six teams right now that legitimately could probably win a national championship. Would you agree with that, six?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, I agree with that. Hey, let me say this about Jim Harbaugh also and the play call. I get it. Okay, it's over the top, big time. But would it made a big difference in their record? Probably not. I remember in 1980, we had a guy by the name of Herschel Walker. You can steal our signs or whatever. It didn't matter. Everybody knew where the ball was going on every play, and you still had to stop it, right? But it's definitely over the top. I mean, I don't see where it really benefits the team. It did help them none when we played them, that's for sure. Because we had Alabama on our mind. And I heard the caller, Paul. Alabama, they just think they're going to beat Georgia. Is that right? I mean, we're not going to show up. Did they forget who our coach was, Paul? Did they forget that Kirby Smart is 0-2 against Nick Saban in SEC title games? The time has come, Paul. The time has come, and we're gonna take care of that. But I'm not. That's down the road. Now I want to get your thoughts on the Georgia Tennessee game. What's your thoughts?
Well, I don't know how you could go against Georgia. I can't.
I agree with that. But hey, playing on the road in the SEC and in Neyland too. I mean, that's no easy place to play, but I think we should take care of business. But it's still not a gimme by no means. We're about to show up. We'll be ready. But I mean, all these Alabama fans, I'm glad they're happy. You know what I mean? They won the West. That's good. But you're still going to make the road to the national title still goes through Athens. Believe it or not, it still does. We haven't lost in how long, Paul? I mean, what, been a couple of years?
That is
a couple of years. I say it's been a couple of years. Look, but I think we got more firepower than Alabama does on offense. You talked to three people the other day that said they think Alabama has a better defense. If you look at total defense, it doesn't show that. Look at the stats. Georgia's in the top 10. Alabama's not in the top 10. But all that will take place on the football field. We will be ready. But I'm glad the Bama fans are all happy. But you know what, Paul? When we beat them for the SEC title and knock them out of the playoff, then they will know that Kirby Smart is the king. Good old.
Wow, that was great. That was a topper of all toppers. John is in St. Louis. So hello, John.
Paul, how are you doing today?
Okay, John. Thank you. Appreciate you asking.
Good. Good, good. Real quick here, you know, the season's winding down, and, you know, University of Missouri team has had quite a year, and they've had a number of excellent players who obviously are going to deserve some recognition on the SEC teams. And I was kind of throw it out there. I think they're an unsung hero, and a guy who's pulled a Kurt Warner or a Roy Hobbs here has been this Cody Schrader. And
amazing.
I think he has just had a super year. And, you know, I believe if he finishes strong, what would be his chances of winning the SEC Offensive Player of the Year?
In most years, they would be excellent. In this year, they are not good because of Jaden Daniels.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. That's all I had for today,
okay.
Sir.
Thank you. Didn't want to
Bye-bye.
Push you off. I don't know. I kept thinking there was like another question there, didn't you? It was like that was interesting. I apologize. I am off my game today. I just usually anticipate the fact that the call just dies. Tyler is in Georgia. Hey, Tyler.
Hey, Paul.
We're doing well. Thank you.
That barrel from Columbus is about goofy, honestly. But my question today is, what? I had a buddy today that he's a big Georgia fan. He was like, "What do you think if Michigan is undefeated and Florida State's undefeated and Washington's undefeated and Alabama beats Georgia in the ACC championship? What would happen then?"
I would leave Florida State home.
Yeah, that was my. That's what I was thinking too. But
I mean, the problem is Florida State. Their two best wins are over a three-loss team and a four-loss team. Andy Staples next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.